All right. The topic for today's presentation is building effective data portals using standards-compliant ArcGIS platform. My name is Satish Sankaran. I work in product management at Esri, right out of the Redlands office. I deal a lot with interoperability and standards-related items across the platform. My colleague Martin Hogaway works with the consulting services division, and I'll let him speak to what he does.
Sure. So, as Satish says, I mean, actually, professional services is what we call that. We implement our technology with users like yourself, domestically, internationally, across different industries. And I'll share some of the sort of experiences we have seen in the work related to open data sharing, SDI, spatial data infrastructures, and so on. And I think those are some key lessons learned about building an effective data portal. This is not a session about configuring ArcGIS open data, right? So that's you're all still sitting here, so that's good. there's enough sessions of that type of technology, and I think what we're going to try to discuss is a little bit more beyond just building the website and thinking about maybe discussing about how you can actually make it used, right, with a D at the end, so that people actually start interacting with your data and interacting with you as a government or as a provider of this data.
Oh, thanks, Martin. So the way we will structure this presentation, I'll present a couple of slides in the very beginning just to kind of set a baseline for us to have this discussion, raise a few questions, but it's going to be Martin's show all the way, and Martin's worked on a tremendous number of different SDI and portal initiatives. So he's a wealth of experience, which he will share today with you guys. Okay. Just putting some extra pressure.
No, I'm sitting down, if you don't.
Okay, let's see if this thing works. Ooh, come on. So I just wanted to start it off with a simple, I don't know if I want to call it a story or what, but, you know, as we were starting to get ready for this presentation, Martin came up with the title and so on, and I said, okay, what is it that I would, you know, if I was a typical user and I wanted to search for some data, how does this thing normally work? We talk of these data portals. What do we mean by an effective data portal, you know? And I said, okay, let me just, you know, we work out of the city of Redlands here in Southern California. And I said, okay, let me look for some Redlands street data. So typically what would you do? You would just go to a Google search and you would type in whatever, Redlands, California street data. And it took me to, you know, a web page with a bunch of results. And then I saw this one, which was at, right at the very top, maps and geographic data, city of Redlands. Clicked on that. Took me to a web page of the city of Redlands, right? And then I went further into that, and then there was this link there which says, click here to download data from our GIS data portal, which is pretty neat, because at the end of the day, it went to an ArcGIS open data site, if you will, where this data was available with metadata, with the ability for me to download the data as, you know, as KML, as a shapefile, as a spreadsheet, and so on. Also, the data was made available as, you know, REST-based feature services and so on. So to me, you know, without going into the theoretical aspects here, this could be one way in which most people try to engage and find their data. And this was, to me, an interesting experience because I don't do this on a daily basis, right? So the other thing that I've noticed, and I'm talking more from, you know, a user, not a core open data or an SDI person. I'm just looking at this problem as, you know, we all hear these different terminologies. People talk about data portals. Over the last 10, 12 years, I'm sure you've heard all of these terms being mentioned in the context of data portals, which is a newer term now probably. Right from the early days, we've been talking of the FGDC clearinghouses, where data is being disseminated. There's a concept of data catalogs, metadata catalogs, registries and repositories. Registries work more like the catalogs, and the repositories actually hold the data. There's metadata registries, which essentially store the definition and control vocabularies for metadata, and the metadata repositories, which actually store the metadata. You've heard terms like geoportals, regular terms of portal. And recently, on the big stage, we saw the city of LA establishing a geo hub, right? Some of these you may think of them as marketing terms, but these terms actually take on a meaning of their own over time, right? And as if this was not enough, then we have products which tend to have the same kind of names. Martin's favorite child product of his is the GeoPortal. So GeoPortal is an actual living, breathing product, also a concept, if you will. Then there is ArcGIS Online. There is Open Data, which is an initiative, a process, as well as a product from Esri, right? So I guess we just have to deal with it because this is reality and this is how it is today. So in this scheme of things, I'd like to kind of just talk about two specific items that have normally been discussed in this context, one being spatial data infrastructures and the other being open data, right? And before we get to that, how many people here are using Esri's ArcGIS Open Data? So you got a couple of people here. So this is the high-level clearinghouse type link if you want to go and search for open data from different organizations across the globe that have been set up using ArcGIS Open Data, which can all be searched via this one top-level umbrella interface, if you will. So we talked about geoportals, metadata catalogs. I'm just rushing through a few slides here just to give you a preview before Martin takes over. But how many people are geoportal users, the Esri ArcGIS geoportal, open source geoportal product? We've got two people here. You'll be talking a little bit about that too, I guess, today. So geoportal in its early days, at least, I started off as a pure metadata catalog, but over a period of time, it developed more functionality in terms of map viewers and being able to do work with it in terms of printing data, whatever, right?
Yep. Plus, what we saw is that rather than building one catalog, one portal that just looks at its own data, what we started to do and see is you can build these networks, if you will, of multiple portals that I connect to a network of maybe, say, Earth observation-related data or state-level data, and I have a few examples of those as well. And I use a data portal, a geoportal, as just an entry point into this larger network of connected sites that each of the data in those sites I can actually discover from this one entry point.
Okay, thanks. Like I said, I want to just distinguish between those two high-level items, one being the spatial data infrastructure initiatives and its more modern sibling, if you will, which is open data. The SDI initiative, the terminology was coined in 1993. You can read the definition of it here, it was straightly borrowed from the Wikipedia, if you will. SDI denotes a relevant base collection of technologies, policies, and institutional arrangements that facilitate the availability of and access to spatial data, and so on, right? Provides a mechanism for spatial data discovery, evaluation, and application for users and providers. Martin, I was going to trouble you to kind of step in a little bit and explain some of this stuff that's on this slide here, because I guess the FGDC was started in the year, 1990 or so,
something like
part
that.
Part of the OMB directive. And it has been involved with an SDI type initiatives. And it kind of started off with the Geospatial Clearinghouse in 1992. And a lot of people are confused in terms of, what does this thing really mean? What is the geospatial platform? What is the data.gov? And if you can explain the transition.
Sure. So When we sort of entered, and actually I have a slide that shows a little bit of the kind of the progression of some of these data portals in their shape, so I won't cover that right now. So before, say, 2001, there were sort of the what was called the clearinghouses, and those were very typically sort of sites where people list their data in a web page with a link to the file and maybe a link to the metadata, and you can go and download. No searching involved. Between 2001 and 2010, there was a program called Geospatial One Stop, which was an e-government initiative from the Bush administration, and it was geared towards making open geospatial data discoverable from federal, state, local government, and academia. And it was really connected to and built to be this one-stop shop, literally, right? And it served a real purpose, I think. I mean, a lot of the state agencies were able to share their data there and share data with federal agencies, right? So they typically, some federal agencies ask states for their data. States get a lot of questionnaires from multiple federal agencies, and they feel, or they felt at the time, they were getting a lot of duplicate questionnaires. Which data layers do you have? How old is it? What is current? And et cetera. And so through a site like Geospatial One Stop, the state agencies would basically put their data in this one single place, and then the federal agencies who were interested in this data, they could go to this one single place and without having to bother all the 50 states multiple times, right? So it was kind of a way to sort of simplify some of the workflows, if you will, between state and federal agencies. The other thing that it focused on was what was called at that time already a marketplace. So state agencies get funding from federal agencies very often, and they can acquire imagery or aerial photography and so on. And the idea was that on this marketplace, a state agency could post their plans to acquire data, and then a state agency could, or a federal agency or other state agencies could look at that and say, well, we have plans for similar data. Maybe if we join up, we can increase our funding or increase the coverage beyond the state boundary and collaborate in that sense. So Geospatial One Stop also created a collaboration space between different agencies in the geospatial sense. Then in 2008 and 2009, when the Obama administration came into play, there was the upcoming movement of open data. Transparency, accountability, this was also the time of the economic stimulus funding that became available here in the U.S., $800 million of funding that would go to stimulate the economy. And how do you track the spending of that? So open data became a new kind of paradigm, if you will. And this came not out of the geospatial world. And so what happened at the time is that data.gov was released and created. And at the same time, geodata.gov still existed. Obviously, as GIS people, we were raising our hands and said, well, 90% of your data is spatial, right? So there should be some sort of collaboration between data.gov and geodata.gov. So that actually happened. The two merged. For a while, there was a site called geo.data.gov. And at the same time, the NSDI program in the U.S. started to think about themselves more in terms of platforms, and they created the geospatial platform. So at that point, there was like a retirement of Geospatial One Stop, an upcoming of Geospatial Platform, and the upcoming of data.gov. And that is actually has been sort of going on for the last 5 years, 6 years, and that is where we are right now. So there is data.gov in the U.S. That it focuses on making lots of open data available. Their mandate is for federal agencies, federal executive branch agencies, actually. But there's also state and local government data there. And then there is geoplatform.gov that focuses purely on the geospatial data and that community. So there's a session tomorrow morning in one of the paper sessions by Jerry Johnston, who leads up the Geospatial Platform program. He'll give an update on that program, so that might actually be interesting to look at.
Okay. Yeah, I think Martin covered quite a few details on this one here. So in terms of SDIs, I mean, there are a lot of examples out here. The first one that I have here on the left, which is the GeoSir, which is an SDI for Caribbean and Latin America data sets. There's Copernicus, where you can download data from some of the Sentinel satellites in Europe. There's the Arctic SDI. There's a group on Earth observations. You know, a whole variety of countries have got together to work with Earth observation information, making it easily available to the public. There's the Geo platform that Martin spoke about, and then the UNGWIG. There are tremendous numbers of very good examples of successful SDI initiatives, right? I've got a map here that shows SDI initiatives around the globe. Hopefully, you know, when I share these PowerPoints, I should be able to provide you some of these links to the different SDIs and marine SDIs around the world. Martin, do you have anything to say about marine SDIs, distinction from regular SDIs?
No, it's so for those who work in the marine sort of space, if you will, or industry, it focuses on the marine sort of the data sources themes, if you will, fisheries, waterways, transportation, sort of coastal zone types of data.
Why was it not considered just another type of data set in a regular SDI?
I'll come back to that.
Okay.
Because one of the trends we see is that there are sometimes, say, thematic spatial data infrastructures, of which this is one example, that have come up. And that actually could help also in the creation of data portals.
Okay, cool. Yeah. Thanks. So we kind of looked at SDIs, and then Martin also alluded to some stuff about the open data, right? And it's interesting to read the sentence taken from the policy requirements section of the open data policy memo from the U.S. government. So agencies should take the following actions to improve the management of information resources throughout the information lifecycle and reinforce government's presumption in favor of openness, right? So that some of the highlights from this document was it kind of recommended or enforced that the data needs to follow open data standards, it needs to be machine readable, it should promote open licenses, the formats should be open, it should be made in a way in which it engages with customers. We still have to take care for confidentiality and privacy requirements. It needs to have good metadata and so on, right? And of course, there are tons of open data portals out there that you can visit, and they're really pretty interesting. Many of them are built using ArcGIS's open data, but there are many others that have been built using open source and other vendor solutions, right? So similar to the one that I showed you previously, if you go and search for this website on Google, you'll see this data portals. There's a nice looking web map here that kind of gives you the ability to search out different open data portals that are available across the globe. So this is a fairly interesting link to visit, right? So what makes an open data portal, right? Bottom line, data sets, metadata, services, some good indexing and search capabilities, but over time, other stuff has been added. So if you want to look at ArcGIS Online itself as an open data portal in many ways, it's not just a question of having data sets and metadata and services, but the way we have structured it and where you can do analysis on top of it, on the data that you have there, you can push in data, host the data there, actually kick up services from within ArcGIS Online, etc. So the concept of open data is kind of become tenuous, and it's becoming more powerful, if you will. So it's not just the original definition of being able to have some data, some metadata for searching and being able to download the data, but being able to do a lot more GIS within the portal itself is bringing new meaning to the concept of a data portal, right? So in the world of data portals, there are a lot of data format standards. There's metadata and cataloging standards, and there are service standards. And I've just listed a few here. Some of them are what you call formal standards that come from very formal organizations like the ISO and the OGC. There are a lot that are coming now from other venues, be it IETF or even W3C and others. There are some that are not really coming from a standards body, but then they become de facto standards over time because they're very popular. So you'll see the use of a lot of this within the context of some of the demonstrations that Martin will be showcasing. This probably is my last slide here, but what is important is using our open platform, there are multiple ways that people are building these, what you can call data portals, right? You can build one using ArcGIS Online. You can have an organizational account, could serve as a data portal for you. There's the ArcGIS Online plus the Open Data Extension, which provides certain additional capabilities of being able to download multiple different data sets in multiple different ways. There's the ArcGIS for Server with Portal for ArcGIS, which is kind of your on-premise one. So if you want a data portal that's more internally facing for within your organization purpose, there is something like, that you can do that's just the same ArcGIS Online type technology running within your environment. Then there's ArcGIS for Inspire that takes care of a lot of the pan-European Inspire requirements for opening up data. Then there is the Esri's ArcGIS GeoPortal server. So that is an open source solution that comes out of Martin's team in Redlands. So you have a variety of ways in which you can tackle this problem. And you've had sessions that you've attended on GeoPortal server, some on open data, etc. But there are a lot of choices, and you have to look at this whole problem holistically and decide which of these solutions actually are going to, you know, fit your bill. With that, I'm going to turn it over to Martin.
Sure. Okay, so I'll be sitting down because I have some clicking to do here and there. So I'll go through a couple of sort of, say, characteristics of open data portals that we have seen over time, and then I'll go through some examples, some good examples, some not so good examples. And the point of those not so good examples is not to put any sort of blame on anyone, but we're talking here about effective data portals, right? In the end, you want people to get to your data, to use your data, etc. Otherwise, you might as well not build the portal in to begin with. Okay, so in terms of the context, we spoke about geospatial platform and data.gov, right? And I spoke about how they're sort of built in parallel. Actually, if you look at the behind-the-scenes technology architecture, they're actually working off of the same catalog. So both data.gov and geoplatform.gov actually work off the same list of data, if you will, right, that they can search. They just provide a different view into that. Whereas data.gov shows you everything, and geoplatform.gov limits itself to the spatial content there. That content comes from a number of different agencies, and these agencies themselves implement portals, sometimes for their own use and sometimes for external use. So, for example, the Environmental Protection Agency, EPA, they use GeoPortal Server as their open data site. And what they do is they register a particular data feed out of that GeoPortal server, they register that with data.gov, and now data.gov can index and harvest the EPA list on a regular basis and ingest that into the data.gov site. They do the same with Department of Interior. Let me just show you that for a second, right? So Environmental Dataset Gateway. All right, so this is the EPA website. This is based on GeoPortal Server, and we've been working very closely with EPA to provide this the ability to provide a feed from EPA to data.gov. Right, so the those sites are, and here's for example an example from Department of Interior. The idea is that every agency creates a data.json file. Okay, so the point of this is that instead of just finding your data at your own organization's site, it can actually now also be discovered at data.gov, right? So you suddenly increase the audience of your data by making sure that your data is discoverable in one or more other data portals as well, right? So this is how you can multiply your audience. Okay, so we have developed some capabilities in GeoPortal Server, and the Open Data app also provides that same format so that organizations who create open data sites can immediately register the content in that open data site with another portal so that it can be harvested, indexed there. So this notion of geospatial one-stop, right? The one is it's not the only one, right? The point is it doesn't matter. Some people call it there's no wrong door to my data. You can get to it in many places. Well, a slightly similar picture, but a totally different context is a Latin America initiative called GeoSUR. GeoSUR is built on also a GeoPortal server, but also uses ArcGIS Online, and it connects to national portals, right? So one level up, you might say, right? So from a national level portal with individual government agencies participating, now we're at a regional portal with countries participating, each of which might actually have their own aggregation, right? So this is the this aggregation of content from individual government agencies up to an international level. A similar example to this would be the Inspire initiative in Europe, and where countries make their data available, they harmonize their data. So in that case, it's not just about discovering data, but it's also about data models, right? So the Inspire context, the data itself has to be structured according to prescribed data models. And those data models, there's about 35 or so data themes: transportation, hydrology, parcels, etc. The typical themes you would see. The idea is that every country puts their data in that structure, and then if you go to the European level site, you can then discover parcel data from the Netherlands, from Belgium, from Germany, and you can mash them together, and they obviously, ideally, would actually match at the border, right? So that's the idea of going beyond just a discovery activity and also into harmonizing of the data itself. A global example is the Group on Earth observations, which guaranteed your country's government is a member of, and or a particular industry association like OGC that we are involved with is a member of Group on Earth observations. And this is a global initiative to make Earth observation data more accessible and used across the world. And we participate in that. In this case, we're not looking at country sites. We're looking at global networks, such as the World Meteorological Organization Weather Information System. That is a long-standing system where weather agencies of the world share weather data with each other, right? The storm doesn't end at the border. And so the individual weather agencies collect their data. They share that data in this specific network. And now this network itself can be discovered and accessed through the Group on Earth observations, right? And the same with the Integrated Ocean Observatory System, IOSS, or with the Global Change Master Directory, GCMD. Those are, each of them are global networks that now connect. So it really becomes this web of interconnected data portals. And it doesn't matter where you start your search, whether it's in the Group on Earth observation or whether it's in ArcGIS, actually. We built some, you can still find all of this Earth observation content. We built some tools in GeoPortal Server that connect to, for example, an OGC catalog service that Geo makes available. And that means that from any ArcMap or from any web app builder app, you can discover content from the Group on Earth observation members and partners and use that in your map, if it's WMS or if it's an ArcGIS REST service, etc. So these are kind of regional, national, and global context in which these open data portals are being made. Well, related to that scale is a short discussion about size, right? So does size matter? It does. If you look at these local government sites, there's a few hundred data sets there. And they're focused on the city. We all saw the city of LA during the plenary. And that provides a fairly straightforward list almost, right? It's almost short enough that you can create a list of a few pages, and these are the data sets that we maintain, like the city of Redlands might have done. Yeah, at a state level, where you see the size of these catalogs grow to about 1,000 or a few thousand, or maybe a little bit less than 1,000, depending on the state. And this is because they're aggregating data from different counties and cities, and they're creating some additional data themes and data layers, and have some additional sort of file downloads and services downloads. This is typically what we see at a state level. ArcGIS Open Data, the last time I looked, it had about 47,000 data sets. All right, so this is the aggregation of all open data that people create and publish in ArcGIS Online. If you enable, make a group in ArcGIS Online and you enable it for use in open data, the content in that group will show up in the ArcGIS open data as well as in your own open data site. Right? So that's how we get to about discount. Data.gov is just under 200,000. Right? So this is a national catalog that is being filled with federal, state, local, academia data sets, and has been, you might say, quite mature, because in the end, it was based on this Geospatial One-Stop program. So this kind of reflects a 10, 15-year program of creating a national data catalog in the U.S., right? We're a large country, so that maybe clarifies a few things also. And then we started looking at some organizations like NASA and NOAA and really looking into this Earth observation industry and theme. And then people talk to us and they say, oh, but that's great, but we have 10 million, hundreds of millions of individual data sets. And those actually represent a very different problem, right? Because how do you then discover that needle in the haystack, as Suzanne Voss was saying? To illustrate that a little bit, let me switch to this site here. So we've been working a lot with NODC, which is now part of the National Center for Environmental Information, NCEI. So NOAA has some restructuring done. And they said, well, here's our data. Oh, okay, that's good. That's, what is that, 24, maybe 20, 24 folders or so. That's okay. Well, let's look at one of these, right? Oh, okay, this is a file. Okay. Then what about this one? Oh, right. Oh, this is a little bit more than we thought it was going to be. And some of these are actually quite a little bit more. And as you can see, each one of these files is a netcdf file that is, several megabytes in size. What do I do with that, actually, right? Do I download a file? Which of one of these do I actually need? Well, what NOAA has done here, actually, let me go up a few folders and then go down into the metadata folder. They created metadata for every single one of these files. And these are millions of files, actually. Let's see. We'll just pick a folder. All right, so now here we can get a list, and this 1,000 is obviously sort of an artificial limit, right? So they create metadata for every one of these files. So they had used the GeoPortal server for many years already, and they created an index of those files. And here we see about 30,000 records. Those are actually collections. Every one of these is a collection of content. And then within that collection, I can then search for what they call granules. These are the individual data sets that they make available within that one collection, right? So 30,000, this one has almost 17,000 data sets within that. Searching becomes really hard in this case, right? As you can see, just looking at the name, it's the same, right? What is the difference here? Well, it's going to be the same organization, it's going to be the same sensor, it's going to be the same data, basically. There's only a few aspects of this data that are different. So we started, a few things happened. They said, we need something different than this particular keyword search, right? You don't do a keyword search because all you find is 500,000 things. And also they started to have a little bit of a challenge with actually indexing this in the technology that we provided. So as part of our development, we started looking at some new technologies and looking at faceted search. Right? So faceted search, for those who aren't familiar with that, you may use it if you go to your home improvement store, right? If I need to replace the little wire I have in my lawnmower, right? I go online and I go to the garden section, the power tools, the lawnmowers, electric ones. Then I find and I zoom in basically through the web, through these facets. I can zoom into my lawnmower type and I can find the thing. It's a little bit like what Yahoo had tried to do with categorizing the internet, right? Sometimes that actually works. So what we have done here is index a number of these metadata records from NOAA, and then we start looking at things like the time period. What is the time period that this data is valid for? And what is interesting is that is one of the key differences between all these different data sets, right? If you look back at the granule site here, well, these are satellites that go around and they collect data, like Landsat and Copernicus is doing now. And the key characteristics that distinguish one set from the other is time and space. Where was it created and when was it created? And then if you go one level up, it is the, okay, what is the collection? What is the instrument that it's part of? So you really need to think about when you create a data portal and you would like it to be effective, think about the data that you're having, the data sets and the types of data you have, and then adjust the user experience accordingly. Right? So in the GeoPortal server now, we create this this notion of facets. And we can then zoom, say if I go to hour here, we can then zoom to the time period of the data, and I can very quickly sort of limit my results to those data sets that are that have a time period that covers that particular interval. Right? So, and as you can see on the right-hand side, my search is being filtered immediately. Right? So I just zoom to the data that I'm interested in. And maybe I can zoom to some other in another way. As you can see, I have a few other facets here. Let me close this. And as you can see, I have different types of metadata, and I have different topic categories. These are those famous ISO topic categories of transportation, biota, etc. And if I'm interested in biota, I'm in luck. Or in the oceans, I'm in luck, because there's only one data set in my catalog that is that. I don't have to do a free text search. I just zoom into the theme I'm interested in. That is the thing that is apparently the only thing here, right? So that's I'll come back to that in this case. The only ocean data set in this particular catalog. But it allows you to allows the user to have a much quicker search experience. Okay, so size matters, right? Size matters because it changes the type of user interface that your data portal is going to have to implement, from a single list to a multifaceted search. The point is that even if you have a large catalog with millions of things in it, it doesn't guarantee that people will actually be able to find what they're looking for.
Martin, what version of GeoPortal supports all that faceted search, etc.?
So what I showed here was the GeoPortal version 2 that we released last Friday, actually. Although we had a version out a little bit before then, but last Friday it was released to a point where we're comfortable that people start using it. And so that's a, sort of a new generation, if you will, of GeoPortal server that we'll focus on for the next foreseeable future. Okay, so that was some kind of context of the GeoPortal that will determine some of your design decisions, size of your listing, how many data sets do you have, what services do you have. The other thing that we have seen is that there is a little bit sometimes a loss in focus, right? Why do we actually create these data portals? And the portal really itself is not the issue. It's the issue that is the issue, whether it's environment, climate change, national security, economic development, right? So what is really the core mission that you have for your data portal? It could be an enterprise focus internally, right? So efficiency might actually be a focus area. But you got to think about this. And again, this also determines the type of data and the kinds of data and the mechanisms of accessibility you make available, right? Do you create downloadable data, files, or do you create a fabric of web services that people connect to the web services directly, right? Different approach to these data portals. So if you look at national security, the focus area there is to make better decisions and quicker, and ensure unity in action. So, for example, here what is important is things like common operating pictures. So it's not really just about a discovery experience. It's about use. What do people do when they come to your portal that helps them achieve the goal of your industry, of your mission, right? Or what is it? Standardized output products, information products, right? Standardized maps, response plans, or standardized views. I can create a view in my portal, or in the portal, I can then share that view with someone else, Right, so here's, for example, OGC has a specification called the web map context, the OGC context document. Well, that is sort of intended to capture a view of data, of services and data. These are the layers. This is the area of interest. And then I can take that context document to another application, maybe a different vendor. They can open up that context document, and they would see in that application the same context. Right, so that's an interoperability specification that is intended to help convey these types of operating pictures in a national security context. Maybe your focus is economic. Right, so okay, here you want to promote innovation. There might be a reason to respond or a need to respond to, here in the US, there's a thing called Freedom of Information Act. Right, so people can ask for data related to certain decisions or policies, and what is the data behind those policies. Well, this is typically sort of the focus area for example, data.gov. Right? They're very much promoting innovation through startups or through application development. So what they do, in addition to their data portal, other than making data downloadable, they also organize hackathons or appathons or development sprints, where a group of people get together or individually, they take data from the portal, they build an interesting app, and the best app wins a prize, and so on. It's all great, right? But we've seen a couple of these initiatives at multiple levels. The appathon is over, the prize winner is happy, the app is gone, right? Well, so how do you sustain that? And that is a key aspect of being effective, is not only think about a cool event with hip people, etc., but it needs to live beyond that event, and it needs to become part of sort of your regular operation of your data portal. Environmental portals are sort of helping sort of make better decisions and sometimes enforcing environmental policies, for example. And a good example is UNEP Life. Let me see if I can find this. So UNEP Life is a website from the United Nations Environmental Program. And they've created a set of reports. For example, I can... I'll do so Europe for no specific reason. Then they take you to a set of reports and maps that are available. So I can maybe see some agricultural areas in Europe. And they have organized, so they have organized for me the data they want me to see, right? Slightly different approach. It's not so much a discovery portal here, but it's really an information portal. I get information about agricultural areas or agricultural issues in Europe or in Africa or in other places and so on. And I maybe get some charts as well. It's not that I'm doing data discovery. It's really information for me. Right? So this is a totally different approach to a data portal, if you will. And very often the data behind these graphs, behind these maps, are still accessible to me. Right? If I want to take this data in some other context and use it in my analysis, I can take this. But as there's a much sort of more interactive experience in this UNEP Live site than in a data discovery context. Right? Make sense? So think about the goals that you have for your portal. Think about the data that sort of relates to that. Think about the sort of the output products, if you will, the information products, the apps, the charts, the maps that relate to that theme of your portal and the data and so on. And of course, still make the data itself accessible and findable and then usable, right? Because people are interested in reading your story and then they want to take that data for themselves. Okay, so we talked a little bit about this, about how open data portals have evolved, right? We said that in the early days, which really is not that long ago if you think about it, we would do file transfer, right? I know Satish has some data, give me a file. Well, right now we would put it on Box or something, right? So Box is kind of the new file transfer mechanism. But that was it. It was peer-to-peer, right? I know you have data, you give me my data, I'll give you yours data, where we both can do something. These clearinghouses I mentioned, sort of the late 90s, when sort of the web was coming up, we just put a list on the site, and anyone here implemented Z3950? Right? Anyone know what Z3950 is? It's a catalog, well, yes, sure. Call read. So Z3950 is a catalog protocol that actually has been used for many, many years in the libraries. And they, because libraries, you might say, have actually been at the forefront of creating data portals. Right? It used to be a big box or a cabinet that you open up and there's a data portal, right? Little cards. Later on, they became electronic. Later on, I can go to my library and go find books that are in another library. Right? Sounds similar, right? They were a little bit ahead of every one of us here. So GIS portals like Geospatial OneStop have come up, and those have really sort of created, as I was describing, a lot more functionality. Marketplace, galleries, communities of interest. We even went so far as to create commenting and like the GeoNet environment there. The sad thing is that people actually didn't use those functionalities very much, right? So why is that actually? Well, if I work in the disaster response industry here in the US, I very likely work at something like FEMA. I do my response work in the FEMA context with my colleagues, with my partners, and FEMA has its own space for collaboration set up for those kinds of things. I don't go to some other place that I once in a while visit to find some data, right? So that was kind of a, in my view, it's kind of a, okay, well, think about function again, right? What is really the objective of your data portal? And does it actually, is there actually a market for it, if you will, right? And to some extent, you become almost a little bit of a product provider if you create a data portal for others. Who are your users? What do they want to do with this? And would they actually use my data portal for those types of activities, right? Okay, so now with WebGIS coming up, the focus is much more on just the services, making those services available and allowing you to take the data you find, right? If you go to an ArcGIS open data site, you can always get an API link to the data set, use it in your own application, use it in ArcGIS desktop, etc. Right? So the portal as such is still there, it's still visible, but it's not necessarily the main entry point. I'm actually going to show that. How's that? So I'll open up ArcGIS Pro here. So I mentioned Geospatial Platform for a while. And actually, one of the things that Geospatial Platform does is it uses ArcGIS Online as the store, the one of the metadata stores in its technology. Right. So there are certain maps and content that Geospatial Platform provides access to that are actually discoverable in ArcGIS Online. So what I did in ArcGIS Pro, I connected to the Geospatial Platform ArcGIS Online subscription, geoplatform.maps.arcgis.com. Everyone here, if you have an ArcGIS Online subscription, if you have ArcMap, you actually have an ArcGIS Online subscription, you may not realize it, everyone with an ArcGIS Online subscription can do these types of things. Your organization will have a link in ArcGIS Online, myorganization.maps.arcgis.com. That's true for every one of you, right? And so GeoPlatform has one of those. What I did is I added the GeoPlatform ArcGIS Online URL in my ArcGIS Pro. And as you can see, I have another one that is my own team site in ArcGIS Online. That is the site that provides me my license in ArcGIS Pro. But the checkmark box indicates that GeoPlatform is my active portal. Right, so those are two distinctive different uses of ArcGIS Online. But the idea is that now I can add data, for example, from Geospatial Platform directly in ArcGIS Pro. And I'll do a search for NHD. Right? So I did a search in the Geospatial Platform, not in the website, right, but directly from ArcGIS Pro. And there was a layer, I think I was looking at Washington in my map, so I'll just add that here. right? You can see that I've done that before. The point is, I don't have to go to a website for this. Because these data sets are available as web services, I can, and the portal itself provides a web service interface, a catalog service interface. I can connect from a client application to my data portal, consume the data in my client application, right? And this is kind of an experience that at least I'm happy with. Because I can go to a website, see a nice page and a nice map. Okay, where is the link? How do I copy the link and paste the link and so on? The workflow of end users interacting with your data portal is really something that that is to be considered. That is the power of WebGIS, right? That makes those types of things possible. Okay, so the idea of data portals and I think this is not very new, is that we become a little bit smarter, right? When you start sharing information from each other, the GeoHub example is I think very key. If you think about the application of Streetwise, there's multiple city departments that have had to work together in some way or shape to make those types of applications possible, right? And that is kind of a power of combining data and making it usable. Okay, so a few lessons learned about sort of open data portals and some experience. So there's two terms that I think I would like for you to think about. One is called precision, and the other is recall. Precision is whether the search results you're getting are actually useful or not. It's a measure, right? This is typically used in search engines, right? And the right-hand side explains you, right? So the box here is all of the content of my catalog. The green sort of part of the circle are the true positives. So they are the things that are actually matching my search. The reddish part of that same circle are false positives, things that really shouldn't be returned to my search. And this might be of the way of your search is set up. If any of you is interested, there's a lot of materials you can read up on, for example, Lucene or Elasticsearch. Those are things like stemming, right? So if I'm from the Netherlands and we tend to concatenate words, right? So individual nouns, and we just make them longer and longer and longer, and they're still a word, valid. Well, what if I type a search for a portion of a word, right? Does it match? If I look for San Diego, does the search engine recognize that as a single thing, San Diego, a place name in this case? Right? Or is it going to search for San and the guy named Diego, right? So the stemming and indexing and parsing out text as you type it in and search for it, really important. So precision is a key metric, right? How high is your precision? And you can do user experience sessions with users to measure what is their perception of precision. Okay, so recall is another important metric, and that is whether the results you're actually presenting are unique, right? So, and that is, if you look at the shapes here, it's kind of the circular portion of the relevant elements, right? Well, that's actually not good, right? If my recall is low, I might miss things that are actually useful for me. So that's another metric that is very important here. Okay, so those are two things that really lie on the shoulders of those implementing search index technologies. And sometimes you don't have a lot of control over this. ArcGIS Online and Open Data are examples. But if you deploy your own technology, for example, with GeoPortal Server, we use Elasticsearch now in version 2. We use Lucene in the version 1.2 of the GeoPortal. You can go in and configure your own stemmers and your own indexers, and you can configure it so that it understands that your primary language is not English, but French or Arabic or Chinese or such, right? So those are configurations you can make that will dramatically affect these two scores for your particular metadata, for your particular users. Okay, so another example here is incomplete descriptions. So and I do this in ArcGIS Online, right? Because we suffer from the same sort of challenges as anyone else. Metadata is boring, and therefore we don't type it in, right? How many times have you seen? Let's see, some of our demo people type in demo when they create an item in ArcGIS Online, right? So, well, I search for demo in ArcGIS Online, and obviously I find a lot of examples there, right?
Most popular topic.
The most popular topic. So I'm dying to see the operational version of this particular data set, because after demo comes a draft and then there comes a final or something, right? I hope. So this is, I mean, this doesn't help, right? Example. So that is going to sort of result in probably a lot of false negatives, right? I'm going to miss something, because that data set might actually be useful for me. But because of a little bit of lack of metadata description there, a little bit of, oh, this is a street data set from 1998 in this area, and it's been maintained or not maintained, etc. I could have learned a lot more about it. Broken links is another very sort of sad experience, if you will. Right, so this is a group and Earth observation portal, and I picked an example, not to be sort of picking on anyone, but this is an experience, right? You go to a site, you get excited. This is an Earth observation portal, 7 million things to be discovered. This is a WMS service. That's good. We can consume those in ArcGIS. Let me see. It's a global data set. Looks like it. Okay, here's a link to the WMS. Awesome, right? I select that. Too bad, right? In this case, those who remember and recognize this, this actually used to be an ArcIMS service with the WMS connector enabled on it. Well, ArcIMS has been retired for quite a while, and maybe someone needs to update that service link here, right? Or at least take a look at the server. So that is very frustrating, right? Because I thought I found the service I was interested in. Service is not available. So this is a lesson for those implementing these portals, especially when you start aggregating content from other portals and other providers, is you really want some information on availability, performance, conformance of all of these resources that you make available. Also, we have done, and there actually are some solutions for that. So we've worked a lot with FGDC, the Federal Geographic Data Committee here in the US, and they have created a status checker, a little tool that goes out to a site and hits and requests a list of services from that site, and then it goes out to the individual services. You see some examples here, and runs some requests and tests. So these are, in this case, WMS services, so it will do a GET capability request to the service. And so I'll try this here as an example. That's not a Windows Media file or so.
It's associating.
Yeah. All right, so this is an OGC WMS capability response. Every WMS service has one of these, right? And it lists who this is from, right? Metadata here, so we can index that. It lists the operations. It lists the layers that are available. It lists projections that this service is available in, et cetera, et cetera. So this is this apparently was working well, and then they do a test of actually getting a map from that, right? So they go out and they do this a couple times a day, right? So not to overload your system, of course. And the service comes back, and in this case, it might actually come back with a blank image, right? Because the area or the scale dependent rendering of layers, etc. But it came back with a result. So that service will get a good score. And some other services might not get a good score. Well, so we have integrated with this in our GeoPortal server. And let me show you that here for a second. So I created an index of some ArcGIS-based services. So we've integrated with that same service status checker tool that I just showed in the GeoSUR site. And we'll just let this go for a little bit because... what you will see is that every one of these services gets a score itself, right? And so we have changed the paradigm from this up and down arrow that you saw in the previous site to a paradigm that we are all familiar with, and that is the phone bars, right? Three phone bars, good 99.74 score percentage. One phone bar, yeah, 35%. This helps your users understand whether they, if there's a few sort of alternative services for the same type of content, should I take the one that is highly available or should I take the one that is 35% available? You had a question, Johnny?
Yeah, is this 127 or 20?
This is 127.
So this is available in one.
This is currently available, has been available actually for quite a while. So for GeoPortal users here, the GeoPortal server provides a listing to the service checker. You would go to the service status checker, you register that link there, and we have help pages on this as well. You register that link there, and then in the GeoPortal configuration, you basically turn on that integration with the service checker, and then you get these little phone bars. And you can directly open up a link to the report for that individual service, right? So the registration was valid. It's good WMS, but somehow the GET MAP request failed. Right, so that's kind of helps your users understand and I think increases the usability of your site. Okay, so so inform your users, right? Help them understand upfront whether something is reliable, useful, etc. You can do this with other things like comments, right? Amazon ratings, stuff like that, reviews of data sets. But there's experiences that you can share with your users. Catalogs not being up to date is another thing, right? It goes back also to these two scores. I'm missing potential items. So if you look on data.gov, you'll see from Bureau of Land Management, there's 97 data sets. Right? So that same process I mentioned that EPA goes through and Department of Interior go through, BLM goes through as well. Well, we have a site of BLM that is built on GeoPortal server, and I find almost 8,000 data sets there. And this is just from one sort of area within BLM. So whereas at this national portal, I only find 100 data sets. If I go to this other BLM portal, I find 8,000 data sets. There's something missing there, right? I miss content in this national portal. That is too bad because that data doesn't get used because people might be encouraged to go to data.gov, which is advertised as the open data portal for the US, well, it's incomplete. So I mentioned a little bit about the NOAA experience, so I won't go in too much into that. What NOAA has done actually is they're really looking and thinking about making their data more accessible and used. So they've worked with Amazon Web Services and make, for example, the NEXRAT radar data available. But this is a little bit of a challenge still, right? This is similar to what we saw before. This data is organized by year, month, day, and then station, radar station, and then you go and download files. So this is great, but it would be nice if some of this data would be available as, for example, an image service, just like was done with the Landsat data or that we're doing with Copernicus data out of Europe. Right? So think about how your users would actually interact with the data. Okay, so I mentioned a number of things like, so serverize your data. That's my point with that, right? And that is happening, and that is a good thing because it means that as long as you can control and make sure that the service itself remains up and remains running and so on, you can interact with the data and see the data and so on, right? So rather than downloading a zip file, give people a way to interact with a web service. Okay, so user experience design. I was on this Geos portal, and we integrate with this. And user interface design, let me go over here, becomes more and more important, right? Because people want to have a nice experience and so on. And so there are some things that could be said over here. So, for example, if I do a search, right, my inclination is I type a search for water, and I hit the first button I see next to it, right? Well, this is not really a search for content. This is really a search for keywords that I'm doing for. So they've integrated an ontology, and I can find related terms. Okay, well, that's somewhat confusing to me, but in the end, we can live with that. So instead of that particular button that was close to that search box, water, I need to find and click the other search button. This is one of the key things, right? If you go to Google's homepage, it's a box and a button. That's it. There's no mistake there. Keep your design simple and don't make it too complicated. Another thing in this site is too bad is that they list a number of Earth observation catalogs. And as you can see, ArcGIS Online is one of those. Remember that picture where I talked about context? Right? Group on Earth observation and ArcGIS Online. From this Group on Earth observation site, I can find content in ArcGIS Online. If you make your content public, it'll show up here at some point. Right? There's a harvesting process and so on. But there's a number of other layers or Earth observation catalogs here that I don't know, right? Because these are all the same, because the name is too long and then, right? So that's a user experience design that you really need to think about. And this is where sites like the LA GeoHub are really making a lot of sort of progress to improving that kind of user experience. So think about that also. So in the interest of time, and maybe hopefully sort of having some discussion, I'll move forward in the presentation here. So the point is that data sharing is important, right? Share what you can. Share it so that that others are allowed to use it. License your data, as I had in the previous slide. Make sure that it's current, right? If you put data out there and then you never update the data set, well, then it becomes quickly unusable and unuseful, right? Make sure that your data is available, that your services are up and running. Don't use IP addresses when you register links, because IP addresses change. We have seen this with many, many cases. Just register domain name, and if the IP or if the system gets updated, then the link will stay the same, and so on. It also means you need to think about organizing your services, right? It's not just, oh, here, I'll publish a data set. Here's a service. No, I'll take it down. I'll publish another one. Take it down. No, this is really requires what you might say content management or curation. Make sure it's machine readable, right? So don't publish a PDF. Yes, you can, but also publish the data behind it. That's always nice to use. Using open formats, shapefile. I don't know if you showed the slide, but Satish had a slide, and it shows that if you look at the ArcGIS open data site, out of the, say, 4 million downloads in a particular month, 3.8 million was shapefiles. So shapefile is an open format. It's a popular format, and that is a good thing to do versus maybe some highly unreadable format. Okay, so GeoHive, I'll show a little bit of an example, is a slightly sort of an alternative approach, right? I'll leave it up to you to decide whether you like this site or it's just yet another example of attempt of creating an open data site. So one of the differences here is they create sort of this notion of a gallery, and in the gallery they feature content, they feature applications, right? Similar to the LA GeoHub. So if I'm interested in something, for example, if I'm buying a property in Ireland, I can go to the web mapping application, or if I'm interested in crime in Ireland, or I'm interested in the environment, and so on. So rather than just data, we can also find applications. And in addition to what they call the featured picks, which are things that they curate, right? So this is, again, someone is curating and looking at all of the different applications that are being made and being created in Ireland. They also allow you and have a user gallery. So these are maps that people create and can share with others. All right, so this is and then, of course, you can still do searches in the catalog and so on, right? So they have a data catalog, and they've organized their data similar, right? You might call these facets in terms of selecting and down-selecting some of this data. So I guess, if I, in the agriculture, there's two data sets here. Just provide me a list, and then I can get to the endpoint here. Oh, I can. This is, in this case, an ArcGIS REST service. This is not so nice, but I can take this layer, take it in ArcGIS Online as a feature layer and consume the data directly, right? So that's a cool idea. So similar to LA GeoHub, if you think about it, categorizing the data, providing some applications, still providing search, and also just focus on the data sets, right? It's not thousands and thousands of data sets. It's the few key layers here. It's not that all of these things are kind of new, right? When we talked about what at that time was GIS Portal Toolkit, which in the end became Esri GeoPortal Server, back in 2006 at the same conference here, our focus was on trying to make these things accessible and discoverable and so on. And as you can see in the tagline, these service-oriented architectures, open data, data sharing, it really goes beyond the portal application. Right? So think about all the other users that people have. It's not just a data portal. An effective data portal thinks about the community, thinks about the users of the data, whether they are developers, scientists, or policymakers, and also looks beyond just a website. Think about community events that you might organize or your own user conferences or such. All right. With that, I think we have some time for questions. So the question is about pruning, right? I think the practice, maybe we should all look at sort of document management as practice, right? There's a set of workflows and concepts in document management systems that can be applied here. I mentioned Box. We've adopted Box, and my number of Box folders is exploding. Right, it's everyone that shares a document with me creates a new Box folder. So there needs to be some governance, some oversight, some content management happening there. I don't have a direct sort of answer of here's the five steps to take, but just the realization that, or maybe an identifying a position of some sort, whether it's a full-time or part-time position of someone who actually becomes the curator or such. Right? A curator. A museum has a curator, right? They decide what goes into the collection of that museum and what goes out, and how do we phase out things that we have in our museum. Maybe those are kind of concepts to really think about.
Is that, are you thinking about document retention policies within GeoPortal? I've also been asked about, you know, open data and ArcGIS, the mapping portals themselves, actually bringing that to the product so that there's some retention policy ideas implemented in the product. So, you know, if an item hasn't been touched in 1 year, it gets moved to an archive group,
yep,
or is deleted, or whatever your particular document retention policy or item retention policy is.
Yep. Document retention policies and so on. Yes, I think those can all be implemented. Some of which can be implemented without any sort of product development needed, like you say, create a group or create a separate instance that is the archive or some other mechanism. Version control is another sort of concept that we could use, right? So there might be multiple versions of this data set available. Somehow they're connected, right? So I haven't really thought about how to do that, but I mean, those are things that we see could make these portals more useful, for sure.
So how are you working on that?
Well, GeoPortal Server is open source, and we welcome contributions from the community. There you go. Yeah.
Regarding the template for the open data portal, it starts out with a basic frame which you can extend by using your own code, web code.
Yep.
Is there any thought to making templates, much like web application, where you can go in skins, if you will, that have been designed for different purposes? Maybe in the open data portal, you could, you know, if you're a county government, just use county government A, B, or C. We kind of drill some of these really good examples like LA or GeoHive down to the people that really don't have the design skills that can get them there in one giant leap. You
know, yep. Yeah, so a question about potentially templates for open data portals. There is some work going on in that area. Other than being able to create multiple sites for open data, and creating these starter sites. One of the other things that obviously that the open data team, you really need to talk to the open data team, but we know a little bit about what they're doing here. So one of the things they're looking at is, for example, the solution templates, right? The application solution for local government, for utilities, for water, etc. And the idea might be that if you think about the function of your open data portal, right, security, economic development, whatever the function is, local government support, you would then be able to select a number of these template applications that you then would make available. You connect those to your data that you make available through the open data site, and suddenly, in addition to just data, a data portal, it becomes sort of a functional thing also. Right, so there is definitely some work there, and I encourage you to find the open data team here at the conference. Yep. All right. Thank you for attending. Please take the survey if you can, and enjoy the rest of the conference.